In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome on in. It is
welcome
a beautiful
back.
Taco
wow.
Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday.
It is. And we are back with another podcast. Mitch, you got a ton of energy. I'm feeling a little poetic today.
You were.
We're in for a little something. We'll see how this goes.
Before we got recording, you were reciting Nicki Minaj as if it were Shakespeare.
What do you mean, as if it were? I mean, is it not equivalent?
Look, kidding. I mean, we just had a whole conversation about this. I don't want to have this again. But I'm just worried that someday we're like the way we analyze Shakespeare in high school and college, people are going to be analyzing Nicki Minaj lyrics in high school and college as if it's something poetic when it's not.
Will be answering questions about Nicki Minaj lyrics on their AP English tests, right?
Jesse and Ari, if they test me, they sorry. Now, what did she mean when she wrote those words? No, she's fucking crazy. That's what it meant. She's crazy.
That's classic. Who knows? So what you're saying, what we're really saying here, the sort of statement that we're making here, Mitch, is that Shakespeare was just the Nicki Minaj of his time. And that's how they viewed him back then, is the way that we view Nicki Minaj now.
No. I think that Shakespeare was more like, she was more like Dre. He was more like Dre. Shakespeare was more like Dr. Dre.
Huh. Okay.
He was a Kanye West. He was a lyrical genius.
Okay. I could see Kanye, because I think Shakespeare was kind of weird, right? He was like,
that he made up.
Right.
Like, they didn't mean anything until he gave meaning to them. So, I mean, Godspeed to Kanye and all the Jeffree Star stuff that's going on right now.
Gotta love rumors. I will say this.
Are you going through a Kardashian divorce, but now you're rumored to have an affair with Jeffree Star? That's stupid.
Of all things, listen. Here's what I will say about this. And to kind of bring some of sports into this, because we're 2 minutes into a podcast and I haven't even talked about sports yet. ever since Kobe's death, I will 100% trust TMZ if they put something out, because they were the first ones on the Kobe thing and nobody else reported it. But TMZ was the first ones to report what had happened, and they were right about it. So ever since then, I've reported.
Yes.
I haven't seen TMZ touch Kanye and Kim at all, so I don't believe the divorce yet. But the minute TMZ reports it, I'm 100% like on board that it's happening. But until TMZ reports it, I'm not trusting.
It's a tough look for Kanye.
That's a crazy story.
You hate to see it for the guy.
What a fall. What a fall. What a collapse.
Yeah.
For an era, a dynasty.
Yeah.
All right. What do we have to talk about today?
We talk about sports on here, guys. I'm sorry. If you're a first time listener, we talk about sports on this podcast, not Kanye. We got the wild card weekend to recap. You're going to get into those games. Talk about the outcomes of them and what we can need to expect moving forward into the divisional round. We're going to go talk about the college football championship that occurred last night. As of this recording, it was last night. We're recording this on Tuesday evening. The college football championship happened on Monday night. We'll get into that just a little bit. We got another round, Mount Rushmore, to go over. We'll reveal that city here in just a little bit when we get to it. Dallin is going to continue his punishment for losing the quick picks this year. And then we're going to get into the divisional round preview to wrap up this show. Going to be a good one, bud.
Yeah, you got it all. Wow, incredible stuff. Well done there, my friend. You just really nailed it.
Really nailed
that. That was great. No, you're absolutely right. And it's going to be fun. And let's just start right with that super wild card weekend, because this is the first time that we've had 6 playoff games in one weekend, 3 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday, billed as super wild card weekend. And Mitch, it was pretty super. There were a couple games that were maybe not great, but we had some really good matchups, some very interesting games the way that it turned out, some upsets, very solid weekend of NFL football. Let's begin with that first game on Saturday. That was the Colts at the Bills. The Bills getting it done, getting their first home playoff win in, what, 26 years, I believe?
First playoff win since 1995.
Since 1995, 26 years for the Bills. Josh Allen, sort of redemption. You know, we talk about the Lamar narrative, and we'll get to him later. But Josh Allen and the Bills failed last year in the playoffs after having a big lead against the Texans. They turn around this year, and this year was very different. They're 13-3. They won the division, and they got it done, Mitch. Impressive for Buffalo. Indianapolis just coming up just short.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get more into Buffalo when we get into the divisional round. But as far as Indianapolis goes, I think this was, let's just put it this way. I'm a Bears fan. Okay. I love my Chicago Bears, but if there were teams that I'm pulling for this year, it's the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns. And I was really glad to see the Bills get this done. And when the Colts matched up against the Bills, when that's just the way the chips fell for the Colts, I had an inkling and a feeling that this was about as far as the Colts were going to get. I didn't think that Phillip Rivers could have led them past the Bills, even though they made it a much closer game. It was only a 3-point game and played pretty well. 27 for 46, 309, and 2 touchdowns. Actually played very well, Phillip Rivers did. Jonathan Taylor, a productive day on the ground, 78 yards, the touchdown, 3.7 a carry. Phil was doing a great job spreading the ball around, but this Bills team just still proved that even against upper echelon, top, you know, upper tier talent like the Colts have, they can get it done. And they played pretty well against a really good Colts defense.
Yeah, I mean, this was really a pretty close game, almost a 50-50 game, if you will. Even consider that the Colts missed a field goal early in the third quarter. You know, you hit that one, and we're looking at a tie game, and even this game came down to a final 2-minute drive by Phillip Rivers, and the refs tried to gift the Colts an opportunity to at least tie it or something, and they squandered that opportunity, and they couldn't get it done, and they arguably should have, but ultimately Buffalo holds on, and that's good for them. And you're probably right. Buffalo was the better team this year. They're probably the better team moving forward. So if you say the quote unquote right team went through in our heads, probably, yeah, that's correct. For Indianapolis, Mitch, what does this mean about their future? I want to have a conversation about this, because
sure,
there is a very solid foundation in Indianapolis and what this team is building. They have a fantastic offensive line. They've got a great running back. Jonathan Taylor's really panned out. It started off a little rocky for him, but over the second half of the season, he turned on in a big way, and it will be a huge weapon for them moving forward. I think they can improve on offense at the pass catchers, both at tight end and wide receiver. This defense was a really, really good defense this year. It almost seems like, and Phillip Rivers wasn't bad, but an improvement at quarterback, and this could be a 12-13 win team next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the next step. Phil, me and him are on a first name basis. Phil,
right?
He was on.
Well,
a
I mean, he's got like 19 children. So if you told him he was your dad, I mean, what is he gonna not believe you? Like, how do you keep track of all those?
Props to him though; he's been faithful the whole time. So that's that's good for him. So he knows exactly what children came from.
I guess.
But yeah, he was on a 1-year deal. He was on a 1-year deal, so now he can test free agency or ride off into the sunset. I don't think that's Phillip Rivers' style. I think he's going to test free agency. I think he's going to see what team needs help now, moving forward. But good for him. I think he should test free agency, because I still think he has a little bit of football left in him. As far as the Colts go, you're right. They do have a good core set for the future. Jonathan Taylor, the big worry out of hit for him coming out of college was that he was a four-year workhorse at Wisconsin. So how much tread is left on the tires, really, for Jonathan Taylor? And he just showed over this last back half of the season and in this playoff game that there's still quite a bit left. So you might get 5, 6, 7 productive years out of Jonathan Taylor. You have young talent at wide receiver like Michael Pittman, Zach Pascal. You have a veteran presence of T.Y. Hilton. You have the monster of a tight end, Mo Alie-Cox, that I think when used correctly could be a very productive and successful tight end in the National Football League. You have the big... you have the great core on defense, and I love that linebacker staff led by Darius Leonard, who was playing at a lighter weight. He was playing at like 215 pounds this year, like a safety weight, and he was playing that, and he actually preferred playing at that lighter weight. Bobby Okereke is another integral piece of that linebacking core. Great front four. Really, I think that what it comes down to for Indianapolis is not a rebuild, but I think you need to start over at the quarterback position and need to look for younger talent and put that quarterback in a position to succeed. They're going to be picking in the back half of the first round. So you could be looking at a Mac Jones. You could be looking at if they're high on him. I'm not personally high on him, but a Kyle Trask, who I think is probably a day two guy. But some people feel that could be a late first rounder. That may be someone they're looking for. But I think it's time to start over at the quarterback position and build up from there because you have a good core to surround that young quarterback.
It will be interesting to see what the move is at quarterback because, honestly, Indianapolis was a quarterback who can lead them into field goal range on a two-minute drive at the end of the game away from at least going to overtime and giving yourself a shot. Or even better, going down and scoring that game-winning touchdown and getting the win. Like, that's, I mean, even with Phillip Rivers and his age and some of the limitations that, you know, despite a good game, there were some obvious limitations for him as a quarterback, what he could do, what he couldn't do. And that's clearly limiting their ceiling. But they were not that far off from beating a 13-3 Buffalo Bills team that's really good. So it will be interesting to see how they tackle the quarterback position, if they do look in the draft, if they go after somebody's, you know, cast-offs like a Sam Darnold, if Carson Wentz were actually to move on from Philly, which... now with the Doug Peterson firing seems less likely. Where do they go at quarterback will be one of the things I'm most interested in the offseason because I was very high on this team going into this year. I thought they'd be a 12-13 win team and they were pretty close to that, but it just didn't unlock quite the way that I thought it did. But a improvement and not even a drastic improvement, a slight improvement at quarterback next season, I think they could be there.
Yeah, I think you just need to look for like maybe one or two steps above what Phillip Rivers is now.
Yeah,
and you're looking at a 12-13 win team.
Yeah, and another pass catcher, albeit a tight end or wide receiver, another weapon for that quarterback. Nyheim Hines is a great complimentary back to Jonathan Taylor. He's been a great pass catching back. That's going to be a huge part of the offense. He has been this season and the last couple seasons. So just a few things here and there, and I think this team could be pretty good. Let's talk about the next game, Mitch. That's Rams-Seahawks. The Seahawks hosting this game fall short against, first it was John Wolford, but then once he gets knocked out of the game, it is Jared Goff with 3 pins in his right thumb. And despite the physical limitations that Jared Goff was playing with that quarterback and behind an incredible defense for Los Angeles, the Rams pulled off the upset and take out the Seahawks at home. Mitch, what are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I heard Rex Ryan, who was a coach on that 2000 Ravens defensive staff, that said that this Los Angeles Rams defense reminded him of the 2000 Ravens defense. And I can see the comparisons of just how dominant they are. We'll get more into the Rams in just a little bit. When it comes down to the Seahawks, I said this early on in the year when they were 5-0, maybe at the time. I hadn't seen a convincing win from them yet. And I don't think they really put a convincing win against a good team up yet. And so I was worried about the longevity of the Seattle Seahawks moving forward. And if they were to get in, if they did get in, or when they did get into the playoffs, if they were going to be able to make a deep playoff run. I think there was no question that they were going to be a contender for their division and a front runner for winning their division. But I was worried about how much or how deep of a run this team could make in the playoffs. And honestly, what was shown was that Russ, he needs people to play well around him. And DK had a fine day, 5 for 96. He had the 2 touchdowns, even with a tough matchup against Jalen Ramsey. But Tyler Lockett didn't show up. And then outside of that, they don't really have a whole lot there left. Chris Carson had a good day on the ground, 16 for 77. That's 4.8 a carry. But he needs – Russ is a game changer when he has the things around him to be able – that enables him to get change the game. And that is a good defense on the other side of the ball to help him out, And he also needs more weapons. Seattle's still a step or two away, I think, from being a serious Super Bowl contender. And I think that showed this past weekend.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you look at this was a 12-4 team. I mean, this was a really good team in the beginning of the year. Yeah, they were scoring lights out. They were also giving up a ton of yards through the air and getting blasted by teams. The defense improved over the second half of the season. The offense regressed. But there are some clear and serious flaws in the personnel and the scheme of this offense, in my opinion. This offensive line is and has been mediocre for the last, I don't remember how long, for the Seattle Seahawks. It has not been good, and it continues to plague them when it comes to the playoffs. And when you face a defensive line and a defense that can get a pass rush like the Rams did and can get pressure on the face of the quarterback, there is nothing Russell Wilson can do. There's nothing they can do. Couple that with the fact that they have never had a consistent run game since Marshawn Lynch left. Like, there is a clear ceiling, and this is the best that Russ could do in a season and with a team with a subpar offensive line and an inconsistent run game. He's still going to get you 12 regular season wins, but come playoff, you face a real good team like this, you're going to lose. You're not going to be able to hold up. And that's exactly what happened this weekend for the Seahawks. So, in my opinion, Mitch, honestly, the Seahawks are wasting Russell Wilson's prime right now. They are absolutely wasting his prime right now. He could have been an MVP this year. He was on an MVP pace. Like, this guy is clearly talented. They finally have weapons around him. DK Metcalf is sensational. Tyler Lockett is an incredibly reliable option. Those two are arguably, you know, one of the best duos of wide receivers in the entire league. You've got guys on offense, or sorry, on defense. You've got playmakers, but not a complete unit on that side of the ball. There are some clear holes in this team. And if they don't make some drastic changes and really try to do something here and not just make minor tweaks, it's just going to be the same for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the subpar offensive line. This starts up front.
Yeah, I mean, he was sacked 5 times, and every play he's running around, and that's how you beat the Seahawks. You get Russell Wilson moving around the whole time, disruptive. He can't do anything.
And honestly, I mean, he needs someone outside of Freddie Swain and David Moore as a third option. He just does. DK and Tyler Lockett, great 1-2s. But you need something outside of Freddie Swain and David Moore as your third option.
Yeah, or a reliable tight end to throw to. That would be a great option.
Yeah, Jacob Hollister, you know? Will Dissly, that's not going to cut it. Like, you need something more. And right now he just doesn't have it. And you're exactly right. Seattle needs to make some serious changes personnel-wise, what they put what the on-field product is going to be for Russell Wilson to have a successful prime. Because 11 for 27, 174, that's not Russell Wilson-type numbers. That's John Wolford-type numbers. So, I mean, really, he was almost replaceable with what John Wolford's pace was before he got knocked out of the game. So, it really is. I would be embarrassed if I'm the Seattle Seahawks of what they're able to put forward in a playoff run. And I think some serious moves need to be made this offseason if they want to be successful next year.
Yeah, 100%. Because ultimately, like, this is a team like, you see Russell Wilson and you see some of the pieces, DK, Metcalf, like we said on the offense, Tyler Lockett, on the defense, guy, you know, the Jamal Adams trade. That was a really solid trade. That's going to work out really well for them. Bobby Wagner is consistent. Jaron Reed on the defensive line. Carlos Dunlap came up big this year. Like, they've got some guys. They don't have a complete unit on defense. Part of that is how many injuries they experienced this year. They're playing with a ton of third, fourth, even fifth string guys at some of these defensive positions. But ultimately, yeah, they got it. You got to do more for your quarterback, and you got to protect him, and you got to give him a consistent run game. Because when the Seahawks were at their best, they had Marshawn Lynch. They had a guy that would consistently eat up yards and open up everything else for Russell Wilson in the pass game. And they have to get back to that. It's not about running the ball more. It's running the ball more efficiently.
It's running the ball more efficiently, and honestly, they need help in the secondary, because in that same time period, he had the Legion of Boom.
Exactly, right?
So he had that secondary that was just devastating pass offenses. Well,
and there are some pieces there. Griffin is good, but he's been banged up this year, right?
Sure, Jamal Adams is good. I like Jamal Adams a lot. I like Shaquille Griffin. I like those, but those aren't the Cam Chancellors. Those aren't the Richard Sherman.
They need more than that, though. That's the issue.
That's not Earl Thomas. That's not that same unit. That's not that same unit. They need more than just those two. Exactly.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. All right, Mitch, let's go to the final Saturday game. This is the Washington football team hosting Tampa Bay and the Bucs. The Bucs get it done. And what's not very surprising to see, but what was surprising for this game for Washington was the performance of Tyler Heinicke coming in the clutch for Washington and putting up a gutsy performance. 300 yards, through the air, two total touchdowns, including a great touchdown run, you know, kept Washington fighting in this game. And if you're the football team, 7-9 division winners, that's all you hoped for, is to fight and give yourself a shot. Don't get down too big. Keep yourself in the game. And that's what Washington did. They came up short in the end. You know, they're not supposed to win this game, but I thought it was a very strong performance, and the type of performance that's going to lead this season, and this culmination is going to lead to a successful and winning culture moving forward for the team. You went to the playoffs, you were 7-9, but you fought, you won your division, and you put up a fight. You didn't just roll over and get smacked in the playoffs. You know, you competed, and even your third, fourth string guys gutted it out and gave a shot, and that's how you build a winning culture moving forward. A very successful season for Ron Rivera and this organization, and a great first year in this sort of new regime, new look for Washington.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, let's go back to the winning culture thing that you just said about Washington, because they have the right guys in place. They have Riverboat Ron at the helm. Okay, great culture guy. President of football operations, Jason Wright, is now in the front office for the Washington football team. That's a great guy to have in the front office, and really has done a good job of piecing together a fairly decent team. I mean, this is a team we talked about winning maybe two or three games this year, and they wound up going 7-9. This is a team,
and that was with like five different quarterbacks this season.
Exactly.
Like, legitimately, I think it was like Kyle Allen, Haskins, Smith, Heinicke. I know they were warming up Steven Montez at one point.
I don't think Colt McCoy's still there.
I don't know, but I mean, you know what I mean. You think about all of that, and the fact that they still went 7-9 and won the division is incredible.
But this team is on the right track. They're still quite a ways out from being serious contenders, but this team's on the right track, and I think they have the right pieces at the helm. That being Ron Rivera and Jason Wright. To help put a good product on the field. You mentioned the name Taylor Heinicke. I think that's heart. That's straight up heart what that guy showed. And with the uncertainty of what Alex Smith wants to come back and is going to continue his career, for a guy that's playing, I mean, he didn't give you a reason to not look at him to be a starting quarterback next year. I mean, this guy showed up when his number was called, and put together a pretty good night, a gutsy performance. Something that's been overlooked, too, about this game, too, is it was a one-score game. This was a one-score game that they'd lost to a far superior Tampa Bay team. So I don't know if that's a knock on Tampa Bay or a plus for Washington, I like to think that it's more a plus for Washington and how gutsy this team was in making it close.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And Heinicke on Saturday night secured himself a 5 to 8 year future career as a fairly compensated backup quarterback in the NFL with that single performance. You know, like, he's going to be able to use this to get $8 to $10 million a year for the next, you know, half of a decade, based on this performance alone, and good for him for doing that. And ultimately Washington is in a good spot. When I look at teams in the NFL, Mitch, and those teams moving forward, you got to look at, do they have an elite unit on their team, and either an elite offense or an elite defense? Like, something has to be an elite unit, and for Washington it's the defense. They already have an elite defense. They really do. This defense is really good, and it's only going to get better, and that is encouraging moving forward for the Washington football team in the context of their division, which obviously they won this year, but moving forward, you know, competing in your division on a year-to-year basis, and ultimately the ceiling of this team, when you already have this sort of elite unit, that is huge. Now, how can they build upon that? How quickly can they improve drastically at quarterback is going to be a question. There are still holes to be filled. Terry McLaurin is great, but what else do you have to throw to around him? Antonio Gibson is great, but you got to get more weapons. There are moves to be made, but with an elite defense already in this sort of year, and the guys at, you know, in positions like you mentioned, great future ahead, I think, for Washington, and this was a huge first step towards that bright future.
I mean, I agree that they need another big target outside of Terry McLaurin. Because I don't think Terry McLaurin is a true number one guy, but let's not overlook the fact that Cam Sims had a great game. 7 for 104.
Oh, yeah, no, great game.
Outstanding game. Logan Thomas is proving to be a fairly reliable tight end, a fairly reliable big option to throw to in the red zone. 5 for 74. They have guys that get the job done, but you're right that they need to get that other one or two big options for whoever the quarterback of the Washington football team is going to be to throw to moving forward. And you already said it, the defense is already approaching elite status, especially on the front four. And let's not forget that, like, guys like Kendall Fuller, John Bostic, Michael Kendricks are also part of that defense. I mean, Ronald Darby, like, these are very well-established defensive players in the NFL that are a part of this defense to go along with that front four led by Chase Young and Montez Sweat. I mean, this is like you said, an approaching elite defense. I wouldn't put them elite just yet, but this is a good unit. This is a good unit.
Right.
They're on the right path.
And that's what I look at when you look at teams competing and have, like, to get to the Super Bowl, you've got to have an elite unit. Right. And not every team in the league has an elite offense or an elite defense. Right. So if you have one of those, you basically have a shot if the other half of your team essentially isn't, you know, horrible. And for Washington, offense was not horrible, but it wasn't really good. Hence the 7-9 record. Can it, you know, that improvement is going to be huge moving forward for them. OK, Mitch, let's move to Sunday here. OK. Sunday morning, Baltimore in Tennessee. Baltimore gets revenge against the Titans, who knocked them out in the divisional round the year prior, 20-13. Lamar Jackson gets the monkey off of his back, the first playoff win, as I alluded to earlier. Mitch, for the Tennessee Titans here, you lose to the Ravens. It's tough, you know. You've had this sort of rivalry with them going back to a couple years, you know, last season, and then earlier this year they played. Titans beat them and went out and sort of, you know, stomped and hung out on their logo in Baltimore, and Baltimore took offense to that. And then here in this game, after a sort of game sealing interception, the Ravens return the favor to the Titans there. I, for one, love this sort of budding rivalry here in the AFC, because these teams are definitely here to stick around. As far as the Titans go, successful season. They were a 9-7 team last year, 11-5 division champs. You didn't have that last year. Despite the first, you know, the first round exit, I still think this is a pretty successful season for Tennessee.
Yeah, I think by their standards, they much rather would have beaten the Baltimore Ravens and be playing in the divisional round right now.
I mean, I'm sure they think they should be a Super Bowl team.
But you know? Sure, yeah. I mean, especially when you have a 2,000-yard rusher, which, by the way, can we just mention very quickly how quietly Derrick Henry rushed for 2,000 yards?
Seriously, I know.
No one's talking about it.
It's
not
like,
only
wait.
Did he get 2,000 yards, but he rushed for like 250 in week 17 to get to 2,000. I mean, fantastic year by Derrick Henry. Should be in the MVP conversation. Not saying he should win it, but he should definitely be in the conversation, and he's getting snubbed in that conversation in my mind. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, this is a defensive win for the Baltimore Ravens. Derrick Henry was 18 for 40, 2.2 a carry. He had 18 carries, and 11 of those carries he was hit behind or at the line of scrimmage. He had no room to run. I mean, this Baltimore defense totally bottled up Derrick Henry, and I think that if they had the right approach here, if you were going to beat the Tennessee Titans, you had to take away Derrick Henry. You could not allow him to get into space. You can't allow him to run all over you, and they forced Ryan Tannehill to make plays, and Ryan Tannehill didn't do it. He was 18 for 26, 165, 1-1. I mean, it really came down to be that simple, and I think what it really did was it showed how one-dimensional the Tennessee Titans are and how much they need to broaden their offensive attack outside of just Ryan Tannehill to AJ Brown or Ryan Tannehill to Anthony Firkser or give the ball to Derrick Henry. I mean, that's what they do offensively. That's all they do. They need to find something else outside of Derrick Henry. And I mean, obviously Derrick Henry is a guy that can carry the ball 30 times a game throughout the duration of the year and not even bat an eye, but you need to have something else because Baltimore simply shut down Derrick Henry and forced Ryan Tannehill to throw the ball, and he didn't do it exceptionally well. So a good defensive win for the Baltimore Ravens, and Tennessee goes into the offseason, I think, needing to look for that next offensive piece to add to broaden their horizons on what they can do offensively.
Yeah, you know, to me, it sort of goes to the inherent ceiling that a Ryan Tannehill quarterback-led team is going to have, right? Like, I think Tannehill's been very successful in Tennessee and good for him. I'm glad it, you know, sort of turned around for him outside of Miami. They've built something around him that works, and he has been effective. But ultimately, if you need to ask Patrick Mahomes to go win you a game, he'll go win you a game. You need to ask Aaron Rodgers to go win you a game, he can go win you a game. You know, like, these top guys, they could go do that. Ryan Tannehill isn't that guy. And so when Derrick Henry is running the ball effectively, or the threat of Derrick Henry is enough to keep defenses, you know, in the box, tight to the line, allow you to do these play action shots down the field, allow you to open up, you know, the offense more. Yeah, it works. But if that doesn't work, you're kind of shit out of luck. And that's what we have seen with the Titans, what we saw on Sunday. It's what happened last year in the first two playoff games that the Titans had against the Patriots and the Ravens. Things went great for them. Against the Chiefs, the run game didn't go quite as well, and they lost. Like, it was like the steam ran out, and that was it. And for Tennessee, like, that's not going to change as long as the Henry Tannehill, you know, sort of setup exists. And that's not changing anytime soon. They've invested into those guys, and rightfully so, because that formula is going to get you 9 to 12 wins for the next 2 or 3 years. And you're going to be competitive, and maybe 1 year you'll make, you know, another AFC championship run and you'll have a shot. Like, I don't think the ceiling is very high for them, but it is going to give them a consistent playoff team. And you know what? Honestly, like, that's more than a lot of franchises could say, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So for Tennessee, there is some sort of big picture questions, but ultimately still very talented team and could get better. This isn't the ceiling for them, I don't think.
Well, it's the ceiling for them as long as they don't add any pieces. If they add some
sure
pieces,
well yeah
and I'm not knocking yeah. Ryan Tannehill here. I think Ryan Tannehill's a good quarterback,
no doubt.
I think that he needs more than AJ Brown to throw the ball to and Derrick Henry to hand the ball off to, because he can only do so much.
And Corey Davis, like, let's give some credit, he had a pretty good year after what has been a kind of up and down career for him. He had a really good year in 2020 and came out with an injury early in this game. But yes, you're right. Like, there are not a lot of consistent options. And the A.J. Brown draft pick a couple years ago was a great pick. Got to hit on somebody in 2021.
I mean, except for our boy Jeff Swain. Feed Jeff Swain the
ball. Of course, right, yeah. Right. Who's been a great – and the tight end system there has worked. You know, Johnny – what is it? Johnny Smith,
Anthony Firkser.
Swain and Firkser. And they play all three of them a lot, and they use a lot of 13 personnel, and they'll run play action off of those three tight end sets, which is a lot of fun. Like, I like the system. It's fun, but they could improve. Some of those options, some of those pass catching options.
On the outside, they definitely need to improve, for sure. Yeah,
no doubt. All right, Mitch, let's go to the next game. This one's tough. We're going to talk about your Bears here. So this is Saints Bears, the Nickelodeon Bowl, as it were. The Saints get it done 21-9. Bears scored on a final. The game, as time expired, Jimmy Graham pulled in like a one-handed touchdown catch, ran straight into the locker room from there.
And then the game just sort of like
ended. And that seemed kind of fitting, like a meaningless touchdown at the end of a blowout loss. And he runs straight off the field. And doesn't that just kind of feel really poetic and beautiful as a summation of what this season has been for the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't bear down. We didn't bear down on Sunday. We didn't get it done. I mean, my heart told me we had a shot. My head told me we have no shot. It was very evident from the beginning when the Bears didn't get any offense rolling. What's the worst part about this is that Mitch Trubisky played well enough over the last 2 months to warrant himself a brand new contract, and we're stuck with that trash can with arms for another 5 years. That's what sucks about this. What sucks even more is that we don't have an offensive line right now to protect him. That offensive line is atrocious. David Montgomery was 12 for 31, 2.6 a carry. We can't even get anything going with a guy that has the potential to be a top 10 running back in the NFL. But is not living up to that potential because we have no one to block up front for him. The defense is fine, but the defensive pieces we have don't even want to stay there because we don't even have the offense to support them. This is just a frustrating situation as a Chicago Bears fan. And if you're a Chicago Bears fan, you're listening to this and it's not frustrating to you, you're a shitty Chicago Bears fan because this should be frustrating to you that you get an 8-8 team with a defense loaded with talent, a guy we took second overall in the draft. We have a solid running back and a fairly decent wide receiver core when fully healthy, and we can only muster up 8 wins and a blowout loss in a wild card round. That should be frustrating to you. And it's frustrating to me, and I mean, honestly, right now, I'm just going to kick back. I'm going to put my hands behind my head, and I'm just going to watch Chicago Bears make another dumb offseason. Just put together another dumb offseason where they don't get any better. And maybe we'll just be 8-8, 7-9 again next year. I don't know. I'm really losing faith in the Chicago Bears organization. I've lost faith in Ryan Pace. I've lost faith in Matt Nagy. And by the way, Bieniemy for head coach. We want Eric Bieniemy to come to Chicago. This is a mess. And I am just, I am disgruntled. I am distraught. I am frustrated. Forever and always, bear down, but we did not bear down at all on Sunday against the Saints.
Well, that's optimistic.
Sorry. I've decided I'm just going to be real. I'm just going to be real about the Bears. I've just decided I'm going to be real about it.
Here's the shitty thing about it is you're right. Like, it all means nothing. Like, the playoff appearance means nothing when you're looking at a team that has a mediocre quarterback that has not been able to find success consistently under this regime and coaching staff, that has no cap space moving forward, that doesn't have a way to doesn't have a clear path building forward, right? We've talked about some of these teams that have got bounced, and it's like the Colts, oh, you know, a couple pieces here and there, bam, you're good. Even the Washington football team, oh yeah, you know, there's some clear needs, but here's this great, like, Chicago, it's like, where do you go? I don't know what they should do, and that's the scary thing, it was a better scenario for the Bears. And I said this all year round, and it's not just because I wanted your team to suck, but it was a better scenario for them to lose more games and get that top eight pick and be able to actually legitimately take a quarterback.
I mean,
and
why couldn't we go 5-11?
Move on.
Why couldn't
right?
we go 5-11?
Because ultimately,
I don't give a shit if you play Pat O'Donnell at quarterback. I don't give a shit. Go 5-11.
Because I mean, ultimately, what is the eight and eight playoff season gets you the 20th pick in the draft, and to be able to tell your fan base, hey, we were a playoff team last year.
Like they don't watch games and realize. We're going to get some shitty ACC defensive back that's never going to pan out, and it's going to be another horseshit draft for us. I mean, why aren't we just going 5-11? Go ahead and get a top 10 pick. Get Zach Wilson. Move on from Trubisky. He's a bum, but no, he played well enough for the next 2 years over the last 2 months that now we're going to give him a 5-year contract because, oh, that's our guy. We spent a second over. I don't give a shit what we spent on him to get him. Get rid of the bum. Go 5-11. Get a Zach Wilson. Get a Trey Lance. Move on from the dude. Get some pieces on that team. You know what? I am calling right now for the Chicago Bears to clear house. Clear house. Start from the ground up. I don't give a crap if we go 3-13 for the next decade. Start from the bottom up and start building an actual winner, because what you're doing right now is not working.
Yeah, there's not a lot of reason to feel optimistic about the Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace sort of era of Chicago.
Get him
which
out.
Had one, which had one successful season, right? Like one, you know? And the others have been subpar, and there are clear, you know, deficiencies in this roster, in this scheme, and ultimately in the future with the payroll. So, I not much more to say here. It's a tough spot, but Mitch, it could get better.
You know what? What's stupid, Dallin, is they're gonna make some ads where, like, it's big name dudes that are well past their prime, or maybe have never had a prime and are not even gonna have a really top prime. And I'm gonna get myself hyped up for this stupid team again. And I'm gonna get my soul crushed. I'm gonna get my soul crushed, and I'm gonna come on here every single week and do these type of rants, because that's the way the Chicago Bears are running under Ryan Pace. Now I just want them to win one time, please, please. I'm so done.
To end this on a positive, Mitch, you picked the Bears to go to the playoffs before the season, and I ridiculed you. I was not shy about my objection to your pick and how awful I thought it was, and I was wrong. Congratulations on going 8-8 and making the playoffs and being correct about that.
I mean, I appreciate
I tip my hat to you.
I appreciate that.
Was it worth it? It's like the Thanos meme, you know, where it's like when he gets the soul stone, or he like snaps the fingers, and his little daughter is like, "What did it cost?" And he says, "Everything." This is like, man, this is exactly what you get. Make the playoffs. What did it cost? Everything.
I think I've said multiple times on this podcast, I don't care how you get the W, just get the W. This is a W that just feels disgusting. It tastes terrible.
It's not good. Jameis Winston, stay away from this one. Yeah,
Don't eat this W. It tastes bad.
Hey, you guys could have Jameis next year. That could be fun.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
I know. Okay, all right, let's move
Dak.
On. No,
give me Dak. Give me Dak.
Oh, sure, that'd be great. How about Deshaun Watson?
Oh, yeah, but guess what?
Could have got that right the first time.
We can't pay him, though, so.
Oh, man. Okay, final game, Mitch. This was a crazy game. Browns and Steelers. The Browns get off to a 28-0 start in the first quarter. Lead at 35-10.5 and ultimately hold on 48-37. The Steelers, Mitch, go 11-0 to start the season. I get on this podcast and I say that they are the worst 11-0 team I've ever seen, and they're not impressive. And they go 1-4 after that and then blow a playoff game to the Browns, who haven't been to playoffs in 20 years. A truly remarkable collapse for the Pittsburgh Steelers to end this season, Mitch. And now, all of a sudden, the sort of question marks around this team seem to be more glaring than ever before. Like, the clear ceiling, their just complete inability to run the ball for like almost the, you know, entirety of the season, last 10 weeks or so, is like scary how inefficient they were, to the point that they just absolutely could not run the ball. They just had to throw it. Ben Roethlisberger attempts 68 passes, sets the record for most passing completions in a game, in an NFL game, not just playoffs, any game, with 47 completions, and they lose, because that is not a formula to win when the opposing defense knows exactly what you're going to do, which is throw these quick passes the whole time. The Pittsburgh Steelers, not quite Bears level as far as the future. They have an elite unit, and that is definitely the defense. But this offense and the future at quarterback, there are some big decisions to make moving forward. And a ton of free agents this season.
Yeah, I think the big ones, they got Bud Dupree as a free agent. They got Juju Smith-Schuster as a free agent. They got James Conner as a free agent. I'd be okay with moving on from Schuster and Conner, because obviously Schuster is shown to be more toxic, very AB-like in that locker room, as far as his antics and what he does off the field, and supposedly on the field, because he shoots TikToks dancing on the other team's logos. He's a really bad sore that you need to get out of your locker room. And James Conner, I mean, his starting running back days are over. His starting running back days are over, because he can't get it done. He just can't get it done. He's not the type of running back that can run behind a subpar offensive line, which is kind of what the Pittsburgh Steelers have right now. This is a team that I think is in a really tough decision, where you need to make some business decisions on what you're going to do at quarterback. Big Ben has expressed interest that he wants to come back, but is Big Ben, bringing back Big Ben, in the best interest of the franchise? I don't think it is. I think that the toll and the abuse that his body has taken over the duration of his career, he's always been praised for being one of the tough guys in the league. What he's endured over his career is, I think, just too much now, and his body's starting to fail him. I know he just threw the ball 68 times for 501 yards. You could see it. I mean, it looks painful for him to throw the football right now. He does not look comfortable throwing a football. I think that it is in the best interest of the Pittsburgh Steelers organization to move forward without Big Ben, without James Conner, without Juju Smith-Schuster, bring back Bud Dupree, have the defense be your calling card, and rebuild the offense. You have young wide receivers there already with Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, James Washington. You have a reliable tight end in Eric Ebron. Just start over at the top with quarterback and move forward. Don't try to hang on to 2006, 2007 glory years and try to force something. You need to move on from Big Ben. And I think now, with his age, with the abuse that his body has taken over the years, this is the time that the Steelers need to do that.
Yeah, the hard thing for Pittsburgh, in my mind, is they do have that elite unit on defense, but some of those guys, including TJ Watt, are just a couple years away from getting paid, like a lot of money. Minka Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, those guys are going to make a lot of money. Bud Dupree, if you want him back, it's going to cost you a lot of money. And all of a sudden, if you start investing money into the defense, what does the offense look like? And it's not just quarterback. Running back's going to be a question. If you move on from James Conner, how do you replace him? If you bring back James Conner, how much are you paying him, right? What's that contract look like? Quarterback and offensive line is okay, but it's aging. It needs to get younger, because it's only going to get worse. The only solid, quote-unquote, unit on the offense is the pass catchers. And if you do lose Juju, it diminishes significantly. Chase Claypool's not going to look as good when he's not the third option next year. Juju looked really, really good when Antonio Brown was getting all the attention. All of a sudden, Antonio Brown goes away, Juju gets a lot more attention. It's, you know, it's a whole different game. And that's, and Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool will experience that if there's no Juju Smith-Schuster next season for Pittsburgh. So when I look at their, when I look at their future, my question is like, if you can't just retool, cause there's too much on the offense to retool, I think they kind of need to tear it down and kind of build it back up. But how does that work with the timeline of the players you pay? That's going to be a question moving forward. They're a really interesting spot. I don't know where they go, but I'm very curious to see the decision-making behind where they go in the next couple years.
Well, and I had totally forgotten this point, that Big Ben still has 1 year left on his contract, and that cap hit, if they release him, is $43.1 million.
Yeah, so I mean, if he chooses to come back, they basically have to have him.
They have to have them. They have to roster him in some way, shape, or form. So you're kind of stuck with him for a year because you can't go a year with $43.1 million just not at your disposal.
You'd be better off playing Big Ben and hopefully winning four games and finding yourself with a shot at Sam Howell Spencer Rattler or Keaton Slovis.
But I
mean, they won 12 this year, but I mean, there's clear limitations physically and it's not going to look better next year. You know,
I mean, you gave me props for calling the Bears making the playoffs, and I said that was an icky. I was very pessimistic about that, and I appreciate you doing that. So I need to return the favor. And you said that this was probably the worst 11-0 team you've ever seen in your life. I would have to, in hindsight, now agree with you that was the worst 11-0 team
it was
I had ever seen. I mean, I looked back at their opponents during that 11-game run. Majority of them under 500.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came down to crunch time, even with missing defensive pieces, they couldn't get it done. I think the only the game they did win was against an under 500 team. I think they beat the Bengals again. So
they beat the Colts. I think week 16.
Okay.
And but that was that was their only win in the last five games.
Right.
You know.
So. I got to big ups to you. So
I appreciate it. Well, the Pittsburgh's so interesting because going into the offseason, a lot of people had them as their like trendy, sneaky Super Bowl team. And I remember saying, and if you've been listening, you know that I was basically just not going to get on board with that. I was low on the Steelers and I was going to be wrong about the Steelers if they ended up being good. And I was kind of right and kind of wrong at the same time. Like they were good and then they were also horrible. Like it was strange how that worked out.
I can recall exactly when you said that because we have our way too early NFL predictions right after the draft. So next couple months, you know, keep your eye out for that.
Yeah.
I believe you said it in that episode.
I'm pretty sure I started on that. Yes.
It was like the week after the draft, you said, I'm not on board with the Steelers.
Yeah.
And, you were correct.
I mean, they went 12-4, but you know,
but yeah, they went 11-0 beating under 500 teams. So.
Right. Right. All right, Mitch, that's it for Super Wildcard Weekend. We'll obviously get into the winners and the matchups at the end of this podcast. Just wanted to kind of break down the game specifically last week. Let's move on to briefly talking about the College Football National Championship, which occurred last night, as Mitch mentioned earlier. Alabama, number one ranked team, gets it done against Ohio State, 52-24. Mac Jones throws for 5 touchdowns. Devontae Smith with a record-breaking half of football. Yes, half. He only played the first half. And his stats at halftime were 12 receptions for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns for the Heisman-winning wide receiver. A dominant win for Alabama to cap off what ultimately was a very uneventful college football season. And it kind of seemed like from the beginning that Bama, in my mind, it was Bama and Clemson. Now, Ohio State made sure that it wasn't Clemson. It was them. But kind of just seemed like it was ultimately going to be those two and somebody was going to dominate their way to a win. And it turned out to be Alabama this year, 13-0, and putting up incredible numbers throughout the season. It just kind of feels like meh at the end, you know, like, cool, Alabama blows somebody out. Like they did every other week this year. Great, right? Like,
yeah, this isn't like a this is one of those games where it's kind of a bad taste in your mouth because you're like, this is not what we, like, after college football, pretty much the season was ruined with the whole COVID situation and conferences starting later because they couldn't decide whether or not they wanted to play. And then you have teams like Ohio State get into the college football playoffs with a 6-0 record. I think this is proof right now that the more games you play, the better prepped you are for a college national championship. Ohio State went 6-0, and they looked great against Clemson. I think that Clemson had a bad game. Trevor Lawrence had a bad game. But when you play against a team like the Alabama Crimson Tide, who are absolutely rolling and quite honestly just head and shoulders above everyone else in the nation this year, this is a historically good offense.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
This was never a game. This was never a game. I guess you could say at the end of the first quarter, sure it was. It was 7-7. But when you get outscored 28-10 in the second quarter, it quickly becomes not a game. The Crimson Tide are just by far the better team. I don't think the right team was in there playing them. I would have much rather seen a Clemson play. I think they would have had a better shot because I don't think nothing against Justin Fields and those guys in the Ohio State crew. But, man, they weren't even close to what Alabama is. They weren't even, close.
I don't think anybody was. That's the thing. And Ohio State, you know, deserved to be there. They fought. They beat Clemson head-to-head. You know, Clemson had a shot, you know, to get to a game with Alabama.
They deserved to be in the playoffs to begin with, though.
I think so. I think ultimately, yeah. I don't really care either way because the College Football Playoff Committee is going to put in whoever they deem worthy. And they were always going to deem Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama worthy. And so, despite six wins.
And that sucks.
And you know what I mean? Six games is what it is.
There's good teams like Coastal Carolina that could have gotten in. But
yeah, I mean, maybe. Cincinnati, I would rather see, honestly. Coastal Carolina ended up losing their bowl game to Liberty. Kind of, you know, puts a damper on the ending of their season.
Sure.
But ultimately it's just Bama is Bama again, and it's just kind of boring. Let's do something better. We've talked about this expansion. I don't want to have this conversation again, but another example of why expansion would be so much better. Maybe it'd be more intriguing. Maybe we wouldn't actually just have the same things over and over again. You know, at least there would be some excitement around it as opposed to, nobody was excited to watch Alabama Notre Dame in the first round of the four. And Ohio State Clemson should have been a good game. It ultimately wasn't, but that's a, you know, fun matchup. But it's also not the first time we've seen it. We saw it in the semifinals last year. Like, can we get something different? That's all fans want. That's all they want.
Yeah.
You know?
That's all I want.
Yeah. All right. Well, college football is what it is. You know, new season ahead next year, and we'll see how much different it is.
It feels very much like a, okay, let's try it again next year type situation.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't think it'll be much different. I think Oklahoma will be just one of the other teams next year. Oklahoma's going to be pretty good. Spencer Rattler, Heisman candidate, they'll be pretty good. But I digress. Okay, Mitch, that's it for college football talk. We're going to take a little break here, go to a mid-roll. When we come back from this brief break, we're going to do our Mount Rushmore and give you the city that we're doing the Mount Rushmore sports in this week. And then our divisional pre-round preview. So stick around and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back to the Sports Hour. That was a fresh new little mid-roll we got going on there, Dallin.
Yeah, you know, we're just trying to flex on the people and get them to be a part of this show and support us on Anchor, you know, of course.
I know. We got to flex on them a little bit at this point. We got to get those people involved.
Yeah.
But moving forward here with the rest of the show, we're going to kick this off with Mount Rushmore. We got another Mount Rushmore coming up. We've done the city of Los Angeles. We've done the city of Chicago. We've done the Emerald City, Seattle. Now we're going to go over to Boston.
Noma.
Noma. Khakis. Go Sox. We're going to do the city of Boston here for our Mount Rushmore. Again, like we talked about, we're basically compiling our Mount Rushmore of athletes for each city. And I think that somewhere down the line, we'd like to put these into a bracket and try to see who has the best Mount Rushmore in sports. But far too many cities left to do before we do that. So, Dallin, let's kick this off with some honorable mentions.
I think that we should save the honorable mentions.
Oh, you?
I think it might give away if we do them first what we did or didn't put in. I'd rather just jump into
okay.
it.
Okay.
And then we can share the honorable mentions at the end.
Okay. I like that.
Okay, cool. Okay. I like to keep things a surprise, you know?
Sure.
So,
let's start off with you. Do you want to do just one and one back and forth
sure.
really quick?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So I'm going to start off with my first face on here. The Great White Hope, Larry Bird.
Yes, easy.
Multiple championships with the Celtics, a multi-time all-star, played on, I believe, two Olympic teams. Honestly, probably the face of the franchise outside of Bill Russell when it comes to Celtics basketball.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, huge. And the second most popular bird in the United States, apart
right.
from Big Bird from Sesame Street.
Well, no, I was going to say the bald eagle, then there's
Little Bird. I guess. Yes, an actual
bird. Big Bird's
bird.
A solid number three, though. Solid number.
I don't know if he might be number one. I don't know. Anyway, but yes, Larry Bird. I mean, come on, like that's an easy one.
That's an easy.
I'm gonna get another easy one out of the way here too. Tom Brady. Okay.
Yes.
We're talking Boston. Obviously, we're including the Patriots into this. And yes, Tom Brady is, you know, the face, the legacy of what the New England Patriots have been over their franchise. The most success that they've had has come in the Tom Brady era. Clearly. He's on Mount Rushmore.
Yes. No, I mean, the GOAT's got to be on there. Six-time Super Bowl champion. Completely revived an entire franchise. Led them into dynasty-level status. Tom Brady's got to be on there. I'm going to go with one that I think maybe not as easy, but I feel like you could make a very clear argument to be on there. I'm going to go with Big Poppy, David Ortiz.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I went David Ortiz as well. And there is a question here with the Red Sox. And I don't know how you went with your fourth one, so we'll see. But there's a question about a couple players here. And I think our generation, where we were raised, that's why we chose Big Poppy. I think there's another guy you could go. You look at the legacy of the Sox. He's an older guy, though. And since we grew up with Big Poppy and idolized, we love Big Poppy. Like, of course, that's the guy we went with, but it made sense to me, too.
Yeah, I mean, and just also, I mean, there's that iconic speech he gave after the Boston Marathon bombing. And, you know, this is our fucking city.
And being the guy, you know, on the team that breaks the curse, you know, that's
oh, yeah.
the most iconic moment in Red Sox history.
I mean,
is
you
breaking
could
the
argue,
curse.
You could argue in that 2004 World Series, he was the main hand, the catalyst in breaking the 86 year curse in
right.
Boston for winning the World Series. So, David Ortiz was pretty easily on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
I didn't even consider him very long at all. I mean, it was pretty easy to put him on there.
Yeah, those three, I definitely. The three that we've talked about, Larry Bird, Tom Brady, David Ortiz, those three were easy. This fourth one, I debated about a little bit, but ultimately I went here with Bill Russell.
Okay.
I went with the Celtic, Bill Russell, the greatest winner in NBA history, the MVPs, the accolades, everything that he's done, what he means for the sport, the impact of him as a, you know, as a black athlete in the NBA at that time, what that meant within the city of Boston specifically, and what that meant in the NBA as a whole, that sort of impact. I don't know. That just, it to me, that was the guy who I went with in the end, Bill Russell.
Bill Russell was definitely one I debated. He was definitely one I debated. In fact, he had been written down, but then I scratched him and I put Ted Williams.
Yeah, I can see that. He was number five on mine if I went, you know, to five.
I mean, this is a guy, the dubbed greatest hitter that ever lived. The only guy to have a 400 season at the plate. Hit 401 in the 1960, I can't remember the year off the top of my head, but hit 401 pretty much. Spent 4 years out of baseball fighting in World War II, came back and was still a star. And just, I mean, when you talk about who Mr. Red Sox might be, it probably is Ted Williams. His importance to Boston baseball.
No doubt. And that was the sort of name I was referring to when talking about David Ortiz, is like our generation, we pick Big Poppy, but there are people that are older than us that would have immediately gone Ted Williams there. And rightfully so. You had both in your four. I only went with one Red Sox, which is what made that sort of situation, you know, that sort of decision hard, because I did go with Bill Russell. But
do you think,
absolutely, a guy that should have been considered there.
Do you think Dick Graff would have gone with Ted Williams?
I don't know. I probably. Yeah, my papa definitely goes Ted Williams there. I don't know
I think so too.
You know, the familiarity with Big Poppy is. Who were some of the honorable mentions that you had?
Well, I mentioned Bill Russell. He's on there.
Right.
John Havlicek, to stay on the Celtics.
Okay.
To go back to the Red Sox, I had Manny Ramirez. I had Pedro Martinez on that list. I had Bobby Orr, a Boston Bruin. And then I also had Bill Belichick on my list.
Right.
And Belichick was one I wanted to put on there too, but I feel like in Boston sports lore, I feel like Ted Williams carries just a little bit more weight than Bill Belichick, because the Red Sox mean so much to specifically the city of Boston there.
Where
New England's kind of a region. Ted Williams, specifically to the city of Boston, Ted Williams holds a little bit more weight.
Sure. And Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are associated with the same era of success, right?
Sure.
And so when you have Brady, you're kind of already thinking that, and he's obviously the more vocal face there. So that makes sense. So I obviously had Ted Williams as honorable mention. I had written down Bill Belichick as well. Paul Pierce for the Celtics. Sort of representing that sort of second, you know, wave of success in the early 2010s with that Celtics team. And then Red Auerbach, right?
Red Auerbach was another one I thought about.
For the Boston Celtics, right? With how much success he had and how synonymous he was with the successes that they had. Another name that I mentioned. So, all right. So a little bit different there. I like that. We were the same on the Seattle Mount Rushmore. And little tweaks here on LA and Boston. That's fun.
Yeah, I gotta say, I hate that you even mentioned Paul Pierce's name. I gotta say that.
Why?
He bugs me. Paul Pierce just bugs me.
Really?
I
don't like the guy
him.
Either. I'm a Lakers fan, but I mean,
as an analyst, I can't stand him. As a player, I can't stand him. I mean, he went off in the wheelchair. I mean, he just bugs the hell out of me. But, you know, great basketball player, sure, absolutely. But just, he sticks in my craw.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that was great, Mount Rushmore. Mitch, let us go into the final part of the podcast here. A little preview of the divisional round.
No, we're going
to
go into this.
Before we do. Yes, I know. I'm not going to skip it.
Second to last part of the podcast, actually.
Before we do, I have to do my weekly punishment. For those who maybe didn't catch last week, I lost our yearly quick picks on the NFL season. My punishment is that I have to get up here and say whatever Mitch wants me to say every week for the next 9 months. So I'm not excited, but, you know, I'm trying to have fun with it. So you kind of told me that I have to mention that you're handsome and then I could do it however I want.
For this week, yes, for this week.
For this week. So, Mitch, I have written you a series of haikus.
Oh, Mitchell. What, by the way,
your
Mitchell,
boy.
Make sure you play my music during this. So.
Oh, yes. Play his kingly music. Is that what you, is that what this is?
It's, King Mitch music.
I guess so. Here, okay, but I've written you some haikus. Okay, so here we go.
Okay.
Mitch is handsome, yes. Sturdy like an oak, he is. Subconscious Yoda.
Huh?
It's because when I wrote this, it's sturdy like an oak, he is. Right?
Bars.
And I didn't. Right. I didn't necessarily intend to be subconscious. Okay, all right, well.
Continue.
All right, that was just the first one, guys. It gets worse. Okay, here's the second one. Mitch is like the Bears. Poopy, poopy, double doink, Trubisky, trash can.
Dallin.
Okay, all right, I got it.
Exactly 15 seconds to get yourself out of the pit of
Okay, I can help it. All right, okay. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Okay, so here's a real one. Once in a grand wood, a majestic elk emerged. Twas the lordly Mitch. Wow. Chills.
You know, Dallin, I didn't appreciate the Bears. And for that, because I am King Mitch, you, my friend, are going into the pit of misery.
Oh, come on. The other two were good.
Yes, but
also, that one was pretty good. Poopy, poopy, also, double doink, nope, Trubisky, Dallin, trash can.
You're
come
missing
on.
The point. This is not a Mitch roast session.
Okay, all right.
You are, my friend, are now in the pit of misery. And I've just written your name down.
I don't think that's fair.
I think
fine.
It's completely fair because you're serving a punishment. You're serving a punishment, and you went to that. So
I'm defiant, okay? Listen, I'm not going to go down easy. You made me talk about how my Dodgers did not deserve a World Series
Dallin,
champ
I didn't
victory.
Have hair.
Okay, all right.
You can serve your punishment.
Okay, put me in the pit of misery. It's
you
fine.
Are in the pit of misery.
Poopy, poopy,
now,
poopy, poopy, double doink, Trubisky trash can. Okay,
here's
can
the deal. You can get yourself out, but you have to put together a hell of a performance next week.
Okay, all right. I'll come with. I'm going to be like Neil Patrick Harris next week, man. I'm gonna bring it.
That was a piss poor performance, Dallin.
Okay, the other ones weren't bad.
What was that last one again? Read that to me and tell me what sense that made.
Once in a grand wood, a majestic elk emerged. Twas the lordly Mitch. I'm saying that I mistook you for a majestic elk.
Okay.
That's a compliment.
I don't know, bud.
All right, well, that's my form of compliment. Flattery not your thing?
How does that talk about how I'm handsome? I don't understand how that talks about how I'm handsome.
A majestic elk? You don't like being majestic?
I enjoy being majestic. I am majestic on a daily basis. I know what being majestic is.
That's what I'm saying.
But I fail to see how an elk can be handsome. I am failing to see. Well, actually, the subconscious Yoda thing, that was bars. That was bars.
Okay, but also started that one out with Mitch is handsome, yes. So, like, you know, I just kind of really put it out there to start.
All I'm saying, dude, is you need to serve this punishment to the fullest extent.
Okay, all right.
And you're cutting corners, my friend.
I'm gonna fight back a little bit on this, is all.
No, you don't get to fight back. Cause,
well,
guess
I already
what?
Did.
I had a bald head in the middle of winter and couldn't get a girlfriend for months. And did I fight back? Absolutely not. I took it like
all right,
a champ.
I don't know. I don't know if it's fair to put the blame on you not having a girlfriend entirely on the shaved head. Okay,
I was
I'm just
bald,
saying,
dude.
I'm just
I was
saying.
Bald. Now, granted, my bald head was very handsome, but
I
was
I
bald,
you
dude.
Great.
Chicks
Sammy hated
hair.
Me. Oh my gosh, Sammy was so mad at me.
She was livid.
She was suing. I have seen. I don't know if I've really seen Sammy like really mad at me. She was very disappointed in me.
She did not like what happened. No, she did not like what happened.
She was not a fan. She was not a fan of it all. But she is a supporter of this podcast, and we love her for it. Thank you, Sammy and David.
Be more like Sammy and Dave. Yes.
We love them. Divisional round, Mitch. Let's start this off. Saturday, early game. The Los Angeles Rams. Jared Goff, one hand and all, taking on the Green Bay Packers. This is a very intriguing matchup. And a healthy Goff really makes this an interesting game, Mitch. I hesitate, and I know they had success against Seattle, but the Packers are a very different team, a much better team. I hesitate to believe that the similar sort of formula, control the clock, dominate on defense, run the ball really well, Jared Goff does enough. Like, I hesitate seeing that be as successful this week as it was last week against Seattle. I am going to take Green Bay in this game, but I'm also not counting out the Rams in what is the best defense in the league. It was the best defense in the league in the regular season, and they proved it last week against Seattle. Green Bay has their hands full with this defense, and the Rams defense can absolutely single-handedly win this game for Los Angeles. I 100% believe that.
So who are you taking then?
I'm taking Green Bay. Okay. But all I am saying is that this isn't just like a walk in the park, easy win, like Green Bay. Like, there is definitely a scenario where the Rams can win this. The defense has to play out of its mind again. And I just think the Packers are a solid team on offense and defense enough to get a win.
Yeah, I don't think that this is a walk in the park win for Green Bay either. However, if you control the clock, Aaron Rodgers can go down and score on you in 30 seconds. So,
right.
With that being said, right now, the latest odds right now, Green Bay -6.5 is the line, over under 46. I'm going to take the over in this game, and I'm also going to take Packers at -6.5. I'll take the line. I like the Packers by about a score in this one. If not a little bit more, but you're absolutely right. Green Bay has no means a walk in the park win this week. They're going to have to fight for this one, but Aaron Rodgers and what this Green Bay Packers offense has been able to, specifically the Aaron Rodgers Devontae Adams connection with the addition of Aaron Jones on the ground, this is going to be a really tough team to stop. And give me the Packers covering the line and getting past the over-under.
Yeah, I will say this, the formula for winning if you're the Rams is you've got to keep the Packers to 20 to 24 points. If you can keep it there on defense, your offense maybe has a shot. If Green Bay hits 28 to 30 points, the Rams are not going to be able to do that on offense.
I don't know if that's possible to keep Green Bay to 20 to 20.
I'm not saying it's possible either. That's what I'm saying. But that's how you have to win. If the Rams are going to win this game, then it's got to be a defense. Like, you know, you can't beat them in a shootout. You're not going to beat them in a shootout. You've got to hold and really limit that offense. And again, I just don't see that scenario. I'm with you. I'm, you know, like 30 to 23, you know, around there as a final result. Green Bay gets the win. It's kind of where I'm leaning. Mm-hmm. All right, Mitch, the next Saturday game, this is probably the game I'm most excited about.
Game of
the week, Baltimore at Buffalo, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, a duel of the 2018 draft class. This is going to be fun. This is going to be really fun. Two teams that got some close victories in the first round, got that first playoff win off their back. Now they're playing loose. Buffalo's hosting. 2-point favorite. Over under. I have it at 50.
Yep.
That's what I'm seeing. I'd say over on that one, by the way. I'm thinking this might be a little more than that. Though these defenses are playing really well. This is really fun, Mitch. I'm not going to say where I'm going yet. I'll let you talk.
Well, when it comes to the over-under, I don't think I'm going to take over or under. I'm not even going to touch it because this could be a game where it's 23-20, and it could be a game where it's 36-33.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I'm not even going to touch the over-under, but the Bills right now at -2, I do think the Bills right now are the better team, the hot team. I know the Ravens are coming off a lot of momentum from the end of the regular season. Just got that win over the Tennessee Titans. Lamar Jackson got the monkey off his back as far as getting a playoff win goes. But Buffalo is such a well-put-together team. And like I said a couple weeks ago, they're playing loose. They're having fun. This team looks like that they are at their peak right now. I'm going to take the Bills to cover -2, and I'm not touching the over-under. So give me the Bills over the Ravens.
Yeah, you know, obviously I really like this Bills team. I like what they've built over the last couple of years with McDermott and Brandon Bean as the GM, Josh Allen, the improvements that he's made, what Brian Daboll and that offense has done for him. It's all been fantastic, and they've been a very good team. But somebody's going to get upset this week, Mitch.
Oh, boy.
It's not going to go 1-2. It's just not, and it would be foolish to think it would. So someone's going to get upset. I'm going to take Baltimore here. This is the tightest of all the lines. -2, that's the tightest of all the games. I think Baltimore has a really good shot. With how well that defense played against Tennessee, if you can have a similar effect on this Bills offense, if you could really make them one-dimensional, really be disruptive, you're going to have an opportunity in this game. And if they run the ball and Lamar Jackson runs the ball the way that he did, there's nothing Buffalo can do about that. This could be a very interesting game. I'm going to take Baltimore here as my upset of the week because, again, somebody's got to get upset. Give me Baltimore.
I mean, at this point of the year, when you're picking divisional games, you can't hate on the upset.
Unless you're picking the Bears to beat the Saints.
Why don't you just shut the hell up? No, but I mean, honestly, that's the best comparison that you could have come up with. Like, it really is that. Like, unless you're making that pick, you can't really hate picking a underdog here instead of picking the favorite. So I can't hate on you for picking the Ravens over the Bills. This is going to be a really, really good game and probably the most entertaining game we're going to have all weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. Storyline-wise, though, Mitch, this next game, very intriguing. Browns traveling to Kansas City to take on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. This is a rematch of an all-time classic college football game, Oklahoma versus Texas Tech, a game that I think the final score was 66-59.
Yes.
I think Baker Mayfield threw 7 touchdowns. I'm pretty sure Mahomes passed for almost 600 yards that game. That is, you know, an incredible Big 12 college football game. And here we are just a handful of years later, and it's Baker Mayfield versus Patrick Mahomes with a whole hell of a lot better talent around them, especially on the Patrick Mahomes side of things. Texas Tech, not quite. Kansas City Chiefs. This has the makings for a fun game. I'm taking Kansas City. I cannot pick against them. I will not pick against them. But I expect this to be like a 41-30, you know, type game. I think this will be pretty high scoring. I think this should be pretty entertaining.
You know, Dallin, we always have one underdog, and I love the underdog. Right now the line is Chiefs -10, over under 56. I'm going to take the over. Life's too short to bet the under. Give me the over. I'm going to take the Browns +10.
Wow, you're taking the Browns in this.
I'm going to take the Browns +10. Look, they're going to get their coaches back. They're going to get all those people back from the COVID list going into this week. They've served their they're going to be wrapping up doing their isolation, their quarantine thing after testing positive for COVID. We're going to get Kevin Stefanski back calling plays. Not to say that the play calling wasn't great last week. It was absolutely fantastic, but Kevin Stefanski has done a fantastic job coaching this team. And to have your leader, your captain, the general of that team back on the sideline is going to be huge for the Cleveland Browns. Chiefs coming off a bye week. Last time I actually took a chance to take a look at the bye week for them this week when they came off of their bye week in week 10 or 9. Let me double check. Make sure I got this right. They had their bye week 10. They came back and barely won a close game against the Las Vegas Raiders in week 11. So they can be vulnerable coming off of a bye. I like the Browns +10 in a long shot win. Give me the underdog Browns.
Well, listen, and like I said, I mean, someone's going to get upset, and it's most likely Like, honestly, it's probably most likely the Rams or the Browns, right? The team we don't expect. We just assume the one seed's going to get the win there. That is definitely not always the case. You look at what happened with Tennessee and Baltimore last year is a great example of that. So I don't hate it, obviously. I think the Browns deserve an incredible amount of respect and credit for what they did last week with virtually no practice, no head coach, I mean, an absolutely obliterated coaching staff, and to come out and get a win in the manner in which they did against a division rival.
They're going to get Joel Bitonio back.
Yeah, and a team that they had lost 13 straight road games against Pittsburgh.
17 straight, I believe.
17 straight? I mean,
they hadn't won in Heinz Field since like 2002 or
whatever. Yeah, it was 2003. So to do all that, a ton of credit to Cleveland. And yeah, they should not be overlooked in this game. They definitely have a shot. If this is the divisional round of the playoffs, everybody has a shot. Everybody has a shot. You got to be on your A game, no doubt. Mitch, final game, Sunday, late afternoon. It's going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints. Tom Brady versus Drew Brees in the divisional round, divisional matchup. Third time this year the Saints and the Bucs have met. This should be a pretty compelling game. This is not nearly as exciting as the other three games because of, honestly, for me, the quarterbacks. You know, Josh Allen, Lamar, super fun. Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, great. That's the future of the NFL. You know what the NFC gave us? Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, I love it. Great. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and one-handed Jared Goff. Like, that's what the NFC gives us in quarterback play. Like, can we get some young, exciting, good quarterbacks in the NFC, please? Like, geez, bro. But I digress. Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Should be fun. Should be interesting. Saints are the better team, though. That defense is really playing at a super high level and has, since Brees went out and Taysom Hill kind of took over in the halfway part of the season, the defense really kind of turned it on, and they've been incredible since then. So I'm going to take the Saints in this one.
Yeah, right now the line is at Saints -3, over under 51.5. Give me the over once again, and I'm going to take the favorite in this one. I got to take the Saints. By the way, fun little statistic. First of all, good thing they're holding this late afternoon because Tom Brady and Drew Brees have to make sure they get back to the retirement home in time for dinner.
True. They're not allowed in. They got to call security. You know, it gets like locked after 7:30.
Yeah, so at least they're
going
to get back to the rest home in time for dinner. The combined age at quarterback for this game is 84 years old. These are two plus 40 quarterbacks playing each other in a playoff game, which in itself is a story and fun. However, the Saints are, like you said, the better team. Give me the Saints -3, and I'm also going to take the over. I think more than 52 points will be scored in this game. So give me the Saints at home to take on the Packers in the conference championship.
Yeah, it is. This divisional round is really stark, sort of shows the stark contrast between the future of quarterback in each of these conferences and why people are so excited about some of the AFC teams. Like, I make that joke, but really, I mean, Lamar, Josh Allen, Baker, Patrick Mahomes, that's the four quarterbacks in the AFC. Fantastic. And then the NFC, it's like Drew Brees, you know, he's close to on his way out. Tom Brady, same thing. Aaron Rodgers, MVP, but he's an older, you know, guy. Jared Goff, not exciting as a quarterback. Like,
well,
you know, even if he's been good, you know, it's like,
I mean,
where
just look at
that,
the style
it's
play.
The, it's the not style play. The talent and the young quarterback talent is all in the AFC, apart from maybe Kyler Murray and like Dak Prescott in the NFC. And that's like basically it.
I mean, look at the style of play difference between the AFC and the NFC. And I don't know if this would warrant an argument of like there's an NFC style quarterback and an AFC style quarterback because the NFL just isn't that type of league. But I do want to point out that Josh Allen throws well outside the pocket. Lamar Jackson uses his legs well. Baker Mayfield throws well outside the pocket. Patrick Mahomes throws well outside the pocket. Those are the AFC quarterbacks. Look at the NFC quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers, pocket quarterback.
Well, Rodgers throws well out of the pocket.
Sure.
Everybody else, though.
But traditionally, pocket guy. Tom Brady, pocket guy. Drew Brees, pocket guy. Jared Goff, while young, or though young, pocket guy. I mean, these are complete. There's a total contrast between the two conferences this year at quarterback. And it's going to be interesting to see how much how different the football product on the field is going to be between these two conferences.
Yeah, no doubt. And the strength of these teams, right? In the AFC, it's these young teams with explosive offenses. In the NFC, it's these elite defenses, right? You look at the Rams. You look at the Saints playing with a really elite defense right now. On Tampa Bay, it's the offense. Green Bay, predominantly the offense. But, different contrast of the styles of teams for sure. It will be a fun weekend of playoffs, and we look forward to watching those games this weekend, Mitch. And that is going to do it for this podcast. This has been a lot of fun, my friend.
Yeah, always a lot of fun.
It's been a good time. It's been a good time. As you heard throughout this podcast, and if you don't already, give us a follow on Anchor. Check out the page. It's anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. You can go on there, support the show monetarily with a monthly donation, and become a permanent part of the show. Earn yourself a permanent shout out every single week and help us create a better product for you, the listener. You can leave us a voice message and get involved in the conversation. Let us know your thoughts on some of our topics from this last week or any of your sports takes that you've been brewing for the last little bit. We want you to participate, be a part of the show, and Anchor's the best way to do that.
Yeah, and if you haven't already, you can go ahead and follow us on Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. You can follow us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. Go ahead and get on. You can listen to us anywhere that you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us there. Go ahead and get on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck. That's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. Next week, we'll have some divisional round breakdowns. The championship weekend in the AFC and NFC will be a ton of fun. And maybe talk a little more basketball. We're about maybe 10 games into the season, early season still, but some interesting things here and there. We'll get into basketball as the season kind of rolls into it a little more. But Mitch, that'll do it this week for the Sports Hour. We appreciate you guys listening, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!